Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey Eagles fans, this is Mike K from NJ Advanced Media, and welcome to the No Huddle Show podcast, where we discuss anything and everything Philadelphia Eagles. You can read our content on nj.com/Eagles, bookmark that, and you can subscribe to our exclusive Eagles Insider Tech service, where we'll break news, give you insider observations, and provide in-depth analysis. Through Eagles Extra, you can send questions and comments directly to us, and we'll respond to your phone. With me today, as always, is my fellow Eagles beat reporter, Chris Franklin. Today, we're going to discuss the big Zach Ertz trade. Zach Ertz is now a bird of a different feather, I guess you could say. I don't know. We'll also discuss the ongoing saga of the Nick Sirianni, Jalen Hurts play calling fiasco. And we'll kind of recap the loss to the Bucks, even though I'm not sure if there's a ton to take away from the loss itself. But on that note, Chris, we haven't slept a lot. How are you doing?
What's sleep? What the heck is that? You know, it's been a while, man. It's not too bad, man. It's been an eventful 24 hours, not even 24 yet. It's been a lot's going on in that past, from Trey Thomas and running into the game to all of a sudden Zach Ertz. We have to say put former in front of his name now, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. I got to write some stuff. I thought Zach Ertz really kind of went out with a bang, got the touchdown yesterday, and then talked about it roughly 15 hours later with us. Just to give you guys some insider info, when a guy is traded, typically he does not talk to the local media, let alone the Philly media. And I got to tell you, Zach Ertz really impressed me. Not that I expected anything less of him. He's always been a huge stand-up guy, someone who has always given the media the time of day, even in the worst scenarios. And I think he really wanted to express both to the media and to the fan base how much the city meant to him, how much the ups and downs of everything will stick with him. He was here for roughly 9 years, is number two all time in receptions for the franchise. He's number five all time in yardage, and he's number seven all time in touchdowns. You could kind of tell with the way he responded or reacted after the game that something was up. Prior to the game, Jay Glazer of Fox Sports kind of implied that one of the two tight ends could be traded within the week. You know, I asked around a little bit. I was under the impression something could go down this weekend. Wasn't sure where he'd be going, wasn't sure when, but there were definitely some rumblings late last night. And, you know, luckily the Eagles ripped the Band-Aid off, and we're going to be able to enjoy our weekend a little bit. But this weekend's been extremely crazy, today has been very crazy. So, Chris, let's get into this trade. So the Eagles trade Ertz to the Cardinals for rookie cornerback Tay Gowan and a fifth-round pick. What have you learned about Tay Gowan in the last couple of hours that you can maybe share with listeners about what the Eagles are getting in this cornerback?
Well, with Gowan, you know, he's a former sixth-round pick from the Cardinals. You know, he's a 6'1 guy, real lanky. He's got speed. You know, he's a pretty fast guy, and something you want to see, especially when it comes to closeout speed. You know, if you get beat at the line and you need to run back and try to make a play on the ball, the thing is, he's still really, really raw when it comes to the position. And when you look at the way he fits into this current secondary now, I mean, he's not going to supplant. I don't think you should expect him to see him supplant Steve Nelson. I don't think you definitely is not going to supplant Darius Slay. Vontae Maddox, he's I think those three are all set where they are. And then you start to go to further down. I mean, you still have Zach McPherson, you know, the team's fourth round draft pick who hasn't like really made a dent when it comes to defensively. So he fits right now, as the way I look at it, he fits right behind Zach McPherson, but ahead of Mac McCain, who has been inactive for all the games that he's played so far. So when you look, I think overall, I think it's more like it was like a lottery ticket trying to acquire him in his trade. And you hope he can spend time with the defensive coaches, start to develop a little bit more and become a contributor more likely for next season to try to get used to the way the system is and then get acclimated to the city and the organization and then have him compete for a job next year. I think that's where you're looking at for this, but I personally don't expect a big impact, immediate impact from him right away.
So they also acquire a fifth round pick. They now have, I believe, 3 5th round picks. They own their own. They have Washington's, and then they have the Cardinals, obviously. Now, the Gardner Minshew trade, if Gardner Minshew plays 50% of the snaps in 3 games, the 6th round pick that the Eagles sent to the Jaguars will then become a 5th round pick. So they'll have 2 6th round picks. And 2 5th round picks if that were to happen. Look, I think it's solid value. I know Zach Ertz is a huge name within the organization and everything, but really, he was one of their top earners. He had a really stripped down role. He had 11 games left on his contract. Instead of waiting out those 11 games and hoping the guy signs a deal that could get you a compensatory pick, they get immediate value in a 5th round pick plus a corner that they seemingly like during the draft process. Oh, and by the way, that 5th round pick will have a 4-year contract, which extends the value of Ertz, and the cornerback has a 4-year contract as well. So they've basically got 2 4-year deals out of 11 games from Zach Ertz. Now, nobody's expecting that 5th round pick to be the equivalent of Zach Ertz, but you never know. You know, the 5th round pick could be another Kenny Gainwell. So I don't hate the value. I'd probably give the deal about a B. What would you give it?
I think it's about B minus C. I think the more valuable pick is the fifth round. The more valuable asset in this whole entire trade is the 5th rounder, because not just when it comes to a player, but even just comes maneuvering on draft day. I think if you throw in one of those 5th round picks, you can move up, I probably say, about 7 or 8 spots if there's a guy who you really target linebacker. But if you really target and move up, but I think that's more of what is the desired asset here in this deal.
Yeah, I think it's all about flexibility. So they have 10 draft picks. They have the potential for 3 first round picks. At worst, they're going to have 2 pretty nice first round picks, 2 second round picks, a 3rd round pick, a 4th round pick, 3 5th round picks, and a 6th round pick. Not too shabby. You know, we spoke to Howie Roseman immediately after the trade. He said this was the right opportunity. I think this is a great trade for Zach Ertz. The Cardinals are the only undefeated team in the league. They're going to use him pretty heavily. They've needed tight end help. Ertz is a great route runner, which should work in Cliff Kingsbury's spread offense. And he will be favored. I think he'll be used a lot like Dan Arnold was and Max Williams was earlier this year and last year. Look, I think this can help a tight end, especially when they stretch out the field and there's so many weapons. There's Christian Kirk, there's DeAndre Hopkins, there's AJ Green, there's Andy Isabella, there's a bunch of other dudes. Like, they're stacked. And I think, you know, this kind of reminds me, I tweeted this earlier, but if you remember, the San Francisco 49ers traded Vernon Davis midseason during the Broncos' huge Super Bowl run, and he turned out to be a key cog for Peyton Manning on offense. They win a Super Bowl, then he goes off and signs a big contract with Washington. Ertz could be in a similar situation here, where he has a really nice year with the Cardinals, potentially wins a ring or goes deep into the playoffs, reassesses his value, and he gets a nice deal somewhere else. I don't see a downside for Zach Ertz here. He was not going to be back next season. This allows the Eagles now to kind of evaluate Dallas Goedert over the next 11 games to figure out if he can be not only a number one tight end, but an elite tight end. And I think this amount of time kind of allows them to do that. I also think the Eagles would be smart to be sellers over the next couple of weeks anyway, because really, well, they could be 4-4 at the trade deadline if they beat the Raiders, who were dealing with a complete mess off the field, and the Detroit Lions, who can't seem to put together a win at all. The Eagles really are only beating up on mediocre or bad teams. They are struggling mightily against playoff contenders. So it makes sense to trade away aging assets. Howie Roseman still wouldn't admit that they were dealing away or being sellers. It's just they were looking for the right opportunity. And I think as we get into this Buccaneers recap, it'll show you that the Eagles are still kind of figuring themselves out. So, Chris, let's get into that. We spoke to the Eagles lost to the Buccaneers 28-22. The game felt a lot more one-sided than that score. Really, the Eagles were only in it because Bruce Arians got greedy on a fourth down play in the fourth quarter, up to touchdown scores. The Eagles finally decided to run the ball. Oh, what a relief it is. And got into the end zone, did a two-point conversion. They were down by six. Then Jannard Avery has a foolish and kind of unfair taunting penalty and basically bails the Buccaneers out. I think the Eagles are clearly being baited into penalties because they are so undisciplined. But like the real story here is nobody expected the Eagles to beat the Buccaneers, but it's how they lost that I think is frustrating a lot of people. Once again, there was only one running play with a running back in the first half. When the Eagles finally did decide to run the ball in the fourth quarter, fans sarcastically gave each run a standing ovation. Like, I get that the running game is kind of a pound in narrative for the past month or two, or even really the past 20 years. But like, this offense is so one note, and it is putting so much pressure on a second year quarterback who is both inconsistent and inaccurate at times. And I just don't know how you can be successful as an offense with putting every single decision and every single snap on this kid's shoulders. Chris, you're the former quarterback. Break it down for us.
Well, I'm not. I think everybody realizes that the NFL pretty much is a passing league right now, and it's never going to go back to the times where, you know, you're going to see like a true 50-50 split or a 40-60, you know, pass to run ratio. But you do have to run the ball at least to establish everything else. Even if it's just to give him go ahead and get a break to Hurts's arm, you know, or to alleviate him from getting hit. And I don't know what it is about the Eagles taking a long time, as Nick Sirianni particularly calling the plays, taking so long, wait until the second half to decide, hey, you know what, let's go ahead and run the ball and establish the run and run right at teams, because by then it's too late. How many times have we seen that on first down? It's almost predictable now. First down, you almost start to look at an RPO is coming, and the defenses, and he saw, and I saw this, I think I told you this in the press box, like you see like the way that the linebackers were playing with, toying with Hurts in the offensive line right before the snap. They look like, oh, you know, I'm just, and they were just going to the flat area, and all of a sudden they go right to the area, the read area, and they can and basically confound that side that are running the RPOs. And the RPO is a nice thing to have in your back pocket, you know, if you actually do the first thing, which is actually hand the ball for runs. I know there's a bunch, there's more complex than that. You have the counts in the box, all that other stuff. But there's a lot to be said with Brandon Staley, the Chargers coach, said a couple weeks ago about just lining up head on head against a team, even if they're tough to run against, and just running it down there and say, hey, you know what? We're not going to shy away from this. We're not just going to hey, you know what? You're just a better run stuffing team. We're just going to pass. You got to bring some physicality to this table with this. Cause if I'm an Eagles offensive lineman right now, I'm asking Jeff Stoutland, like, can you please tell Nick Sirianni to actually let us run the ball? Because they're absorbing so many, they have to keep dropping backs, and it gives the aggressiveness to the opposing defensive lines. They don't actually get a chance to assert themselves in the running. And lo and behold, when they actually do run the ball, it's success. So I know when we talked to Nick Sirianni this afternoon, he said they're going to do some self-scouting and that. But I think they have to not only do self-scouting, but look in the mirror and actually say, hey, you know what? You actually got to live up to running the ball no matter what the success is, especially early in the downs and early in drives.
Yeah, and I don't think this is a matter of, like, peer pressure or fan pressure or anything. I just think it's logic, right? Like, the Eagles are going – like massive amounts of time without handing the ball off to Miles Sanders, who came into training camp and as considered an ascending talent and walked out of the summer being like a bystander in a pass happy offense. Like it just doesn't make sense. And like, I'd understand if they had no talent at running back, I'd understand a little bit more if the wide receivers were constantly getting open. But what happened yesterday was they had three drives that lasted basically 12 yards or 12 plays total. They ran the ball once during those drives. And I didn't have an issue with the play calling because guys were getting open. But eventually, when a smart defense realizes they don't have to play the run, they start playing zone coverage, and there's less and less separation in that zone coverage for the receivers. And that's why they struggled to get open. And I just think you're asking a lot of your wide receivers. You're asking a lot of Jalen Hurts to put this on his arm. And I just don't think he's accurate enough to be dropping back 20 something times in a first half. I just don't think that's his game. And we talk about, like, you know, trying to appease his skill set, but really all they're doing is hindering it because they can't be one-dimensional. The whole point of Jalen Hurts is that he's a dual-threat quarterback. Well, in order to threaten defenses, you have to be able to give another threat other than the one dual-threat quarterback, or it's becoming, you know, it's like Cam Newton was like a one-man wrecking crew for a while, but he is so much more significantly talented than Jalen Hurts. He's also bigger. He's also got a better arm. Like, it's you can't just put this all on this kid who a lot of people came into the season not even thinking he was a top 25 quarterback. But suddenly he's the key and the answer to everything on your offense. He's the judge, the jury, the executioner. He's the appetizer, the entree, and the dessert. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. That's not a way to win a ball game. And I just think the Eagles are beating mediocre teams right now, and that's fine, but they're never going to grow if they can't set the tone early with running plays. I just don't know how that's feasible. From there, let's get into the defense. Chris, what was your main takeaway from the Eagles' defense in this one?
I thought that the third level of secondary, I thought, did a decent job, you know, just basically – I thought they did a decent job against Brown, Godwin, and Evans and Holden Brady. I was disappointed when it came to seeing the amount of pass rush that they generated. I know Tom Brady likes to get the ball out like 3-4 seconds. He can diagnose the coverage as quickly and get the ball to where it needs to go. But the fact that they got some hits on them, but the fact they weren't able to consistently get pressure on them, I thought that was an issue. But my main gripe right now, and there really has to be a true overhaul on this team. And I know it's a lot. It's been made note of a lot, brought to light a lot, but these linebackers just aren't it. I've seen, especially when it comes to the base thing of tackling, you see guys going too high on a guy like Leonard Fournette, a big back who's very powerful. You can't go have a guy like Alex Singleton. You can't have Eric Wilson try to go high and try to tackle a guy that big and expect to have good results. There are so many times where basically Fournette's son, Davion Taylor or Alex Singleton, in the power game, a power run game, and it's getting to be I'm tired of seeing it week in and week out when it comes to that. And you look at the way that the missed tackles continue to pile up, and you see opposing offenses another 10, 15, 20 yards down the field on a tackle that should have been made or a tackle should have been stopped. And This team doesn't value linebackers for the life of me. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because they look at the have an outer shell principle or what have you, where you have to have you get your edges, your defensive ends, corners are more important than the linebackers. But it's enough's enough. I mean, I don't know what else to do.
Has no one ever eaten an M&M? The outer shell doesn't really matter. It's like it's all about the chocolate or the peanut. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. For real. Like that's real life. That's real talk. You know?
Yeah. And when it comes to a third, when's the last time this team actually had a true third down linebacker? Like I want a linebacker who you felt comfortable enough that could drop back into coverage and also stop the run downhill and stop the run and be a sure tackler.
Nigel Bradham, 2017.
Yeah. And that's it. And they haven't. And when's the last time they actually developed one? That's an even scarier
Sean
part.
Stuart Bradley.
You're being kind with that one.
Yeah. Omar Gaither. I don't know, but yeah, no, your point is well received. I think, look, this team's got a lot of draft picks and they've got to start prioritizing youth at positions that they don't normally prioritize youth and money into. And I think linebackers at the top of the list, I think they're going to have to add another defensive end. I don't know what Ryan Kerrigan does. Like, I really don't. Like, you guys played probably 60 less snaps than he did yesterday and had the same stats. So let's get into our final thoughts. I guess looking at the as they get into this mini bye week, what's the one major thing outside of the run-pass ratio that you'd like to see the Eagles improve upon out the gate against the Raiders?
I like to see them change their mental focus coming into a game. I don't know what it is. They have to find out why they're starting out slow in so many of these games. And you think, especially offensively, teams normally script the first 15 plays. So you know what you're going to run right in there just to see what other teams are going to adjust to that. And we heard Jordan Mailata pretty much say it yesterday. The Buccaneers knew what they were going to do, and the Eagles were slow to adjust. And they really have to find a way. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's pregame. I don't know if it's a pregame meal. I don't know if they're what they're seeing or the play call. Whatever they have to do, they have to find a way to get quicker starts because they're just digging themselves into too many holes, and it takes a lot of energy and exert a lot of stuff to try to come back week after week. It's not sustainable. It's not a way you can be competitive in. For the life of me, I don't know what it is why they start coming out so late. Maybe that's going back to running the ball to feel more comfortable, but it's just crazy. I don't know why they get to the slow starts, man. What do you think? What are you looking forward to?
I've preached a lot about not making overcorrections, but I think when you look at the struggles that they had in Carolina and the struggles that they had against Tampa Bay, they were kind of compacted because you can't really switch stuff up on a 2-day walkthrough, right? Like it's not 2 days of walkthroughs are not going to allow you to really change your scheme. Now that they have like an extra 3 days to work on this as both the coaching staff and give some guys some time off, I'd just like to see them overcorrect overall. Like, find what's going on offense and defense that has just left them rudderless. And I also think, look, words are nice, but like Nick Sirianni screaming at people about discipline isn't really going to do anything. I'd like to see there be some culpability and some, you know, accountability. Guys maybe getting benched, guys maybe losing their spot on the depth chart, guys maybe being pushed down to the practice squad because of mistakes, and mistakes that are easily avoidable. And I think that's really what needs to happen. I think this team is fighting and they're playing strong. I don't think they're extremely talented. I don't think they've been particularly well coached as of late. But I'm not really ready to pack Nick Sirianni's bags and head him back out to Indianapolis. I think this team is growing. I don't think they're that good. They've played a lot of really talented teams at home and then playing Dallas. I think Dallas is a legit contender. It hasn't been easy, but I think we're going to learn a lot about this team with how they try to bounce back against the Raiders and the Lions. And if they lose one of those games, the season's essentially should be like considered a bust, and they should just try to win with the young talent they have. So we'll see how that goes moving forward.
You brought a very good point. I'll make it a brief point. He really does need, just like Andy Reid had trouble going on, Sirianni really does need his George Hegeman moment where he just says, hey, you know what? You guys don't do this the right way. This is what happens to you. I don't know. I'm not saying he needs to cut somebody. Maybe that's what it takes, but he really does need his own George Hegeman moment.
Maybe it's dropping Ryan Kerrigan. Who knows? Stay tuned. But you know how you'll find out about that first? Oh, wow. That's what's called a transition.
Good tease.
Eagles Extra. Sign up for it. NJ.com/text. Chris and I have a lot of fun on there. We do exclusive Q&As. You'll get information before it hits Twitter. You'll get analysis before it hits Twitter. You'll get some insight that you wouldn't get anywhere else. Plus, you get to text Chris and myself, which my parents don't enjoy texting me, but I'm sure you will. Also, remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, the No Huddle Show podcast. Send us your 5-star reviews, your comments, your questions, your inquiries. We love hearing from you, especially when we've had a full night of sleep. For Chris, I'm Mike. We get blah, 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 blah. Keep that in. Don't edit that. All right. We'll see you next week. We are very excited to head to Vegas, and we are very excited to cover what should be a very interesting week 7 now that Zach Ertz is a member of the Arizona Cardinals. Toodaloo, and have a great weekend.